First, a conversation on that rising tide of legislative initiatives to target religion by banning foreign legal systems, rendering under Caesar what is Caesar's, etc. Legal scholars believe, and the Supreme Court has ruled, that such laws cannot single out one religion, such as Islam and Sharia law. But in 2013, 36 bills or amendments were introduced in 16 states, according to the Center for American-Islamic Relations. That number dropped in 2014 to 14, introduced in about 11 states, before rising sharply again in 2015 to 31 bills introduced in 17 states. So now a new wave of laws include all foreign legal systems, whether religious or secular, to get around the religious targeting issue. What problems could this create? For answers, we turn to Faiza Patel, co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice.
This goes back to a kind of earlier movement. You'll recall that during the debates around the death penalty and some of the early debates around marriage equality, you know, courts were referring to the practice in other countries, particularly in the death penalty context, and that was very contentious with a lot of commentators, particularly on the right, saying that it wasn't right for the United States to be looking at foreign law. So here we see kind of a merging of these two movements, this kind of anti-foreign law movement combined with an anti-Muslim sentiment.
I guess I'm dense, but what does it mean to ban laws? I mean, it's not like people are bringing laws in little bags and selling them on the corners. I mean, what is it?
So basically, the way our courts have always worked is that they'll apply foreign law where it's relevant to a particular case as long as it doesn't violate the United States public policy.
Which is what English common law is, yes?
Yeah, that's sort of the basic rule that the courts have followed for a very, very long time. Now, what these new laws have tried to do is say, is to include a statute which may be worded according to the sort of regular common law principle or maybe broader, but sort of makes the point explicitly that we just don't want foreign stuff in our state. So the state court of, say, Kansas is instructed, you court, when you come across a case which requires you to apply foreign law, don't apply the foreign law.
What would be a case that requires a judge to apply foreign law?
Oh, there's so many of them. I mean, it's actually kind of routine, right? So many contracts, for example, international contracts, will have a choice of law provision. Say, you know, the law of the United Kingdom applies. A classic case is when you're trying to determine somebody's citizenship, right? If you're trying to determine whether someone is an English citizen, you look to the law of the United Kingdom, not our law.
But the courts would never dissolve a marriage because it's not under U.S. law. Or if it was done by a justice of the peace, but there was also a Muslim law that went along with it that said these people are married, you couldn't ban or just disallow their marriage or anything.
The way that these laws work, and there's a great deal of variety in the statute, so it's a little difficult to lump them all together. But the basic principle is to say, well, we won't allow you to enforce a foreign law that's contrary to the federal or state constitution. That's the narrowest version of the law, which actually doesn't do all that much except create some uncertainty about what the boundaries are. But then there's another set of these laws which say we won't allow you to enforce any law that comes from a system that's incompatible with ours. Now, that's obviously a much broader proposition because lots of legal systems aren't the same as the United States.
But how would you get evidence for something like this? I mean, if it's a matter of intruding into the bedroom or the house, which is what a lot of these social laws have intended to do years ago, but this is just a new kind of thing, you can't enforce a law which says, you know, the Quran says you can't steal, so, you know, go to bed without dinner. You can't appeal that.
And so here's a classic case, right? So in Israel, for example, Jewish marriages are conducted under religious law.
Right.
Okay. Now, when it comes to whether or not a U.S. court needs to recognize that marriage, whether it's for purposes of inheritance, purposes of child custody, maybe health insurance benefits, all kinds of issues, the court then has to decide in some cases, was that initial marriage valid? So that's where that comes up.
Is there an approach to these that basically says, all right, fine, you can wave this flag if you want, but they really have no enforceable status and we'll just ignore them and they'll be like anti-sodomy laws of the previous 100 years that sort of stay on the books and life goes on? Or is it more dangerous than that?
Well, I mean, I think it's dangerous because of the animus behind it, right? Because that's the rhetoric that is put forward by lawmakers at the time that these laws are passed. To your point as to whether or not we can ignore them, I think that's a really valid point. And in some cases, the laws basically codify current judicial practice, so it doesn't really make too much of a substantive impact. The other thing to keep in mind about these laws, though, is that they have been narrowed consistently, right? So the first generation of laws would have affected, for example, businesses. Now, generally, these statutes will exclude businesses because they realize that this creates some level of commercial uncertainty that they don't want. And so it starts getting narrowed to the family and personal sphere primarily, again, kind of demonstrating that the point really is to sort of really target this one group.
Faiza Patel is co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU. Thank you so much.
Thank you.